Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports headlines.
All right, boys and girls, headlines on Softy and Dick. Beautiful Monday from Husky Stadium, of course, brought to you by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck.
All right, we start with some news in the NFL. Cowboys linebacker Sean Lee, after 11 years in the NFL, announcing his retirement today. Former Cardinal offensive tackle Marcus Gilbert, who sat out 2020, also announcing his retirement. And the Bucks have exercised the demons and the fifth-year option on UW defensive tackle Vita Vea for 2022.
Utah Jazz became the first NBA team to clinch a playoff spot with a win this weekend.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck.
That was 1,000% my fault, but I'll blame it on Jackson.
Okay.
How's that sound?
All right, I got a
question. In 3, 2, and 1.
All right, now you got to tell me, is this real story or fake story? Ready?
Okay, go ahead.
China's top prospect, Fanbo Zheng, is decommitting from Gonzaga and entering the G League.
You don't say.
Or fake story?
I'm going to say that's a fake story.
That is a real story.
Wow.
Zags are not getting Fanbo Zheng.
Why would you decommit from Gonzaga and go to the G League? Because Gonzaga doesn't pay as much? Is that right?
Maybe.
Is the G League?
Maybe so.
I mean, I wasn't even sure that was a real player, to be honest with you.
Wow, I just learned his name, like, yesterday.
All right. NBA basketball. Clippers are signing center DeMarcus Cousins to a contract for the rest of the year.
The Mad Bum fired a 7-inning no-hitter. We can talk about that later, don't we?
We do.
Caused an uproar on this radio station. Second of a doubleheader between with the Giants yesterday.
You see in that game, by the way, the Braves in game one, Zach Gallen, I believe, was the pitcher for the Diamondbacks in game one, and he gave up one hit in the first game, and then Madison Bumgarner threw a no-hitter in the second game.
Ugh.
Jackson, here's your cue to move on, by the way. That means the Atlanta Braves with one hit in the doubleheader. It was the fewest combined hits by one team in a doubleheader in the history of baseball. It's never happened before.
That's anytime you say history of baseball, that means something. I said the Giants. I was stuck in like 2015.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. Well, look, I think the Madison Bumgarner story is actually good for baseball because it's good for people to start having debates about the game again. Like the Trevor Bauer, Fernando Tatis Jr. Thing that took place over the weekend, I thought was great for the game. I actually was kind of hoping that Trevor Bauer would be mad at him and upset with him, and I think that would – it's good for baseball to have heroes and villains, to be honest. And right now, I don't know if baseball really has truly enough of either one in the game. So the fact that you've got this Dodger-Padre thing that's been developing over the years, I think is great for the game. And the fact that we're debating whether or not Madison Bumgarner's no-hitter on Sunday should count as an official regulation no-hitter, just like every other no-hitter, I also think is great for the game. But, I mean, my thoughts are this, that in a sport that has created more new statistics in the last decade.
Oh, my God.
And they're all over the place, right? I mean, you flip on Root Sports and you see them every night.
Oh, my head spins.
For crying out loud.
Okay, what's this new acronym?
Yes, and you absolutely.
My son asked me what it is. I go, I don't know what that is. They just made it up yesterday.
I'm watching the game with Gina. What the hell is WOBA? Can you explain that to me? So baseball has created more new angles on the way people appreciate the game than really any other sport out there. So you're telling me that in a year, and I think the 7-inning doubleheader thing may be here to stay. You know, we'll find out down the road, obviously. But in a year where not all games are created equal, what's wrong with creating another category of no-hitter? And just saying, look, if the guy did it in 7 innings, it's a no-hitter with a 7 in parentheses.
Yeah.
And you're done, and you move on. Why is that so hard?
There's been an asterisk in baseball for a long time when it comes to records, and this is one that you just simply put an asterisk by, just like the combined no-hitter the Mariners had. Was it Kevin Millwood and like five relievers? Okay, that's different than Kevin Millwood going 9 innings and throwing a no-hitter on his own, but it's still considered a no-hitter. It's called a combined no-hitter. This is simply a 7-inning no-hitter. You put the little asterisk in the record book and move on.
Well, I just think again, it's not as impressive as a 9-inning no-hitter because it's 6 outs less. I mean, I don't know why this is so hard.
Six of the most difficult
outs left.
Of
course,
he'd be throwing 120, 130 pitches to get there.
Well, how many times have we seen no-hitters lost in the 8th and 9th inning? All the time.
All the time.
Right? All the time we see no-hitters lost in the 8th and 9th inning. So you know, what's more impressive, a guy throwing seven innings of no-hit ball or a guy throwing 8 2/3 of no-hit ball and losing it on the 27th out? I mean, yeah, clearly it's a guy that's going 8 2/3. So I don't see any reason why baseball can't just create another category because, again, we're not comparing apples to apples. We're comparing apples to oranges and say, well, a guy gets credit for a shutout. Okay, fine. But the rules simply say, and we can change the rule. Right. Anybody can come along and offer to change the rule. I believe since 1991, so 30 years now, baseball has said a no-hitter is when a guy goes 9 innings or more. Now, baseball honestly probably hadn't thought about the idea of a no-hitter over 7 because they haven't dealt with that until this year. So maybe at some point in time you should go back and change it. I just know this, that when you're still dealing with 9-inning games, if every game became 7 innings, then great. Well, but we're comparing, you know, fruit salad to chicken salad here, dude.
I'm sure there's been a 7-inning no-hitter in the past that was...
In a rain-delayed game?
Called game.
Yes.
So, I mean...
Yeah, and 5 innings, for sure.
It would be the exact same thing. You go 7 innings, you retire all the guys without a walk, and or without a hit, rather, and you get a no-hitter, but it's got to be delineated in the record books
well,
as such.
Well, I don't know how you feel about this, and maybe I'm just missing the boat on this. I don't really think no-hitters are that big a deal anymore. I feel like we're getting them all the time. You know how many no-hitters have happened in the history of baseball?
Oh, hundreds.
Right? 307.
Yeah, hundreds.
So over the last 100 years, we're talking 3 a year. Every 2 months, you're getting a no-hitter. There's already been 3. If you include Bumgarner's yesterday, there's already been 3 in the first 4 weeks of the season.
There's 15 times more no-hitters than there are perfect games.
Right, exactly.
15 times more.
Yeah, 23 perfect games. Perfect game to me is like a comet. Okay,
right.
That's baseball's version of winning the Powerball. But no-hitters happen so frequently now, I just don't know how big a deal they are anymore.
Yeah, no.
Am I crazy on that?
No, I mean, I still watch, though, right?
Well,
I mean,
for sure.
Anytime ESPN's got the little ticker that says, you know, no-hitter watch, and they'll usually tap into it, and I'll end up watching it. So it's still...
Do they, though? Do they tap into it now?
I've seen
I got no idea,
I've seen it many times.
Yeah.
Like, anytime I'll see on a ticker so-and-so's got a no-hitter, and it's in the eighth or longer, I'll always flip. But, you know, that makes me think about... Things that get me excited to watch regular season non-Mariner baseball, and there's very, very little because I do not consider myself a fan of regular season Major League Baseball unless the Seattle Mariners are playing. I am a Mariner fan. I'm not a baseball fan. But what gets me is history.
Yep.
What gets me is what we saw this weekend between the Dodgers and the Padres.
Yeah.
I mean, that is fantastic.
Drama.
And I can't remember a time in a regular season series that wasn't in September, that didn't mean like the regular season division or something or
right,
a playoff. But
right.
I can't remember a time I paid attention to an April baseball series that did not involve the Seattle Mariners. But that was an incredible game last night.
Yeah, I think animosity is good for the game, especially when it's between two franchises. I mean, when you have players and fans getting into fights and whatever, things like that, broadcasters and players, I guess, is good too. But I think the more, I mean, I'm going to use this word, and I'm sure it's 2021. It's probably not PC, and somebody will lose their mind over it. But I think the more sports hate we can have, the better. I mean, it drives me nuts that college coaches don't despise each other the way coaches did back in the day when Jim Walden and Don James would go at it. Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler, people like that. I mean, I love that stuff. You know, how often do you see quotes anymore? If somebody was going after Dabo I think Dabo was going after somebody else for ducking them because of COVID a year ago, whatever game that was. But I think the more sports hate and the more sports animosity that we can have, it's good for the game because it's good theater, right? It contributes to rivalries. And really, I think as a Mariner fan, we've missed out on that because we've never been good enough consistently for anyone to be bothered by us. Ever. I mean, the Dodgers and Giants hate each other's guts.
Yes.
They're in the same division.
And now the Dodgers and Padres.
Yankees and Red Sox hate each other's guts. Now the Dodgers and Padres in the same division hate each other's guts. I think it's almost like a sign that you've arrived when you have that with somebody.
There was a 6-year run we got respect from the Yankees. We got respect from the Yankees beginning by beating them in 1995, and we had it all the way through the 2001. They just dispatched of us in 2001, and we've never gotten respect from them ever since.
I don't think – I think that was more coming from our end, to be honest with you. I mean, look, next time
they had to respect the talent that we had.
Well, sure.
We talked to Nelly about it.
Sure, I think everybody respects the talent, but – Dick, when I say respect, I mean they go to bed, they want to wake up and kick you in the teeth the next day and hurt right. you like they do the Red Sox. We got nothing like that. And we've never had anything like that with anybody because we've never been good enough to have anything like that with anybody. So I think that really is what's been missing. And you mentioned, you know, things that you can do or tune into to kind of, you know, get your attention as a baseball fan. I mean, no hitter, I guess. I don't know. Perfect game for sure. Perfect game, yeah. If somebody was sitting on 20 strikeouts heading into the ninth inning, whatever, and had a chance to break the record, you know, that'd be incredible to watch something like that.
I mean, watching Seager on Saturday, yes. See if he can get the cycle. Yeah. That was cool.
Somebody hitting five home runs in one game. You know, if they could pull that off with a chance to do that, would be it. But it's funny you mentioned that it just doesn't feel the same at all to me. And maybe it's just me because I'm 48 years old, man. But back in the day when somebody was going after number 500 or number 600 or number 3,000, it kind of felt like, and I'm sure it was just in my little brain, it felt like the world stopped
yes.
for moments like that. And I don't think it does anymore.
If we had a hitting streak, it would captivate us.
Yeah.
If we got somebody past 50,
right.
it would captivate us.
Well, speaking of captivating, we're going to do the exact opposite for the rest of this radio show. Jimmy Lake is going to join us, by the way, at 5 p.m. So maybe in that segment you'll be able to grab somebody's attention. Jimmy will join us at 5, and then Michael Callahan, the UW crew coach, getting ready for the Windermere Cup this weekend, coming up at 5:20 on the radio show. John Schneider is about to do something tomorrow that he hasn't done in a year. We'll tell you what that is next on Softy and Dick.
And one app.
You're listening to Softy and Dick. Now, back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen.
You stupid idiot.
Softy and Dick on 950 KJR.
God bless Coach Baird. God bless Coach Baird. We are back at UW. Jimmy Lake is going to join us coming up, by the way, on the radio program at 5 o'clock tonight.
They try to make it basketball on grass.
Got the spring game up on Saturday. I think a lot of people are wondering, what is the spring game going to look like, right? Are we talking about an actual four-quarter game, 15-minute quarters, running clock? What's the story? We'll talk to Jimmy at 5 o'clock about all that on the radio show.
This kid doesn't look Jewish.
Get his thoughts on Zion's injury, all that. You know, the wide receivers have been obviously a big topic of conversation. We'll get his thoughts on what group he thinks is the deepest. Maybe he voted, by the way, in the poll on Twitter. You made a tweet. I saw that. You made a tweet on Twitter earlier today asking people their thoughts on the deepest position on the Husky football team.
I'm in on the poll.
What do you got so far?
The best position.
Got it.
You turned me down. Again,
did I?
Yeah,
I don't know.
He keeps turning me down.
Give me a mic check. 1, 2, 3.
Mic check. 1, 2, 3.
Jackson, good. More.
A little more. Yeah. See, this is again. What Softy does during the break. He turns me down and him up.
Okay. Well, because I got to shut you off because I'm doing a freaking commercial spot for God's sake.
I want to talk. Best UW position group. DB right now is running away with it at 52%.
Yeah, not surprised.
Offensive line, 22%. Tight end, which Trent McDuffie mentioned, 17%. And running backs, 9%. Not a lot of love. I just don't think fans know about the running backs, I guess, right? Because you and I think they're just studs.
Yeah.
Five deep of studs.
Yeah, JV on Sunday had a boot on his left foot today. I'm curious what that's all about. Victor Kern was also out of practice, so we'll see what that leads to. I mean, it's April, so not a big deal, obviously, but I just guess I would say the offensive line, because I think that's where the most experience is on this football team. You know, you're still looking for, I think, a real solid answer at safety. I know that the coaches love Dominic Hampton, you know, Asa Turner, not Asa Turner, excuse me, is the guy who will be out there, you know, as well. But, I mean, has he shown you a ton that you're in love with that guy so far? He's got great hair. I know that. He's got, you know, freaking Adonis hair for crying out loud.
His pass coverage has been sketchy.
He hasn't looked incredible back there yet, so he's got to step up his game a little bit. The transfer from Oklahoma, you know, we think is going to be okay, but we'll wait and see what happens. I mean, Kyler Gordon and Trent McDuffie, I think, are very, very good players. I don't know yet if they're on the Byron Murphy, Keith Taylor, Kevin King, Sidney Jones level. And we're going to find out this season. I actually believe that Trent is closer to that level than Kyler is right now.
Yep.
But Kyler is a year older, so we'll see. I'm comparing it to what I saw a year ago. I will say this. I think Kyler Gordon is one of the best special teams players in college football.
Well,
I mean, that guy can cover a punt. Like crazy can he cover a punt.
Kyler,
holy cow.
Kyler Gordon is going to turn big-time heads at next year's Combine. That's what he's going to do because he's just a freak show athlete. So that will help him. In my mind, I think Trent McDuffie's a low first-round draft pick. I mean, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm overselling it. But I mean, yeah. I think the Washington ties obviously help. The fact that Washington corners do well in the NFL, Washington safeties do well too, Buda
yep.
Baker.
Yep.
And so I just think that that's going to help Trent. But I mean, he's a leader. We heard him. I was so impressed with the conversation.
Yeah, he was awesome.
It was just
yeah, awesome.
You know, it was great to have a face to face or kind of face. What are we 8 feet apart?
Yeah.
It was awesome to have a face-to-face conversation for the first time in 16 months with
anybody. Yeah, well, it was the last time we did that with anybody, let alone Huskies, Seahawks, Mariners, anybody. Yep. It's been the first time since November of 2019, for God's sakes. Well, Wednesday, Jackson got in my ear in the break and said, it's Wednesday, not tomorrow. Sorry, Wednesday.
The mock draft.
John, no. Well, Wednesday is the mock draft, yeah, but that's not what I'm referencing. Wednesday, John Schneider is going to do something that he has not done in almost a year.
So it's kind of a fun challenge now. We love it.
He's going to actually speak to the media. He has not done that since the pre-draft presser last year. I had no idea Bell's tweet this morning. It's like, really? I mean, Carroll talked after the Ram loss, obviously. John Schneider has not spoken to the press in over a freaking year. Guy's been ducking us. What the hell, Schneider?
Did we even get him on the air?
No. Well, clearly. I don't think we did. He hasn't talked to anybody. He hasn't done any media, I don't think, in a year. Because the fundraiser that they normally do at El Gaucho didn't happen a year ago. So that whole train never took place. I mean, according to Greg Bell, he has not talked in a year. So we're going to find out on Wednesday. And it was funny because I saw the Niners had their pre-draft presser today. They spoke a few weeks ago after they made that deal to go up and get the Dolphins pick at number 3. And I'm wondering, when exactly are Pete Carroll and John Schneider going to talk? Because there's a lot to talk about here. I mean, they're going to be talking to the media Wednesday where they themselves have 3 draft picks. Mm-hmm. There's not a ton to talk about draft-wise. And obviously, we haven't even heard from those two since the Russell Wilson saga went down. So I don't normally look forward to press conferences.
I'm looking forward
to Wednesday.
I'm on this one, no question. I'll be dialing that Zoom number. And normally, I'm not a big fan of Zoom press conferences.
But, well, who is? Yeah, it's stupid.
Exactly. But you know, it'll be the first press conference for the Seahawks anyway. Maybe any team's pre-draft press conference where 95% of the questions aren't going to be about the draft.
Right.
I mean, it's all going to be about Russell Wilson. And the thing I'm interested in, and I hope, you know, somebody will pin him down, I'm sure. If, you know, I don't like to jump in and be the guy. I let the guys that cover the team ask the questions. So I just kind of like listen and take notes and stuff. But I hope somebody asks him about just the timing. How many conversations did you have with Russell Wilson going through this whole period? Pre-Dan Patrick interview, post-Dan Patrick interview, and what was said? If the answer is we had conversations, what was said in those conversations, so we can kind of get a better idea of what the discourse was between Russell, John Schneider, and Pete Carroll while this whole thing was going on.
Yeah, I just don't think you'll hear anything else than them presenting United Front with those guys. You know, I mean, pinning them down, you know, and I get what you're saying, and somebody will, I'm sure, you know, whatever, but, you know, I mean, how often is it when you watch a press conference with Pete Carroll and you can feel like, oh, man, he's on the spot now? That never happens. Ever. And if he is on the spot, he'll just wiggle his way out of it, right? And find a way to talk about something else. Hey, Pete, how many conversations did you have with Russell, or when was the first time you talked? You have to be, obviously, as direct as possible.
Exactly.
But he is the master of taking the conversation on a different journey.
Yep.
Okay? And I don't think you'll hear anything else on Wednesday besides, you know what? We love Russell. We've always loved Russell. We've always been on the same page. Nothing has ever changed. Blah, blah, blah.
We have conversations with Russell
about
all the
everything.
Time.
We talk about everything. All right. We're always talking. We're always evolving. Okay. You'll hear. I mean, dude, it's been the same way for 10 years, and nothing will change on Wednesday. And nothing should change, to be honest with you, right? I mean, Pete Carroll's job is to turn down the temperature, turn down the volume, and get these guys on the same page so they can win football games starting in September. You know, I mean, I'd be curious for someone to ask, and maybe it's one of us, you know, is there some fence mending that has to be done with the offensive line?
Yes.
Has Russell Wilson reached out to Dwayne Brown about his? Do you agree with Russell Wilson's criticism? I mean, at that point, he's got to kind of pick one or the other.
Yes.
Do you agree that Russell Wilson has been getting hit too much? Yes or no? How much of that in your mind has been on Russell? How much of that is on the offensive line? you know, there's this perception fueled by the quarterback that the offensive line has been substandard. Do you agree with that perception from your quarterback? So I'd love to hear things like that. And you know what? There's a big part of me, though, Dick, that says to myself, I'd love to hear it, but at the same time, how could Pete Carroll have any other opinion besides, yes, the offensive line has been substandard. Maybe not specifically in 2020. Maybe they took a step last year like we think they did. But I think overall the offensive line has been substandard in the Russell Wilson post-big money contract era. For sure. That's on them.
I think it's fair, but it's better, and I would have loved to see what these same guys looked like if, just throw out a guy, Matt Hasselbeck, were the quarterback the last 7 years. Would we be killing this offensive line if Matt Hasselbeck were the quarterback this last 7 years, or is a big part of why we're killing this offensive line because Russell Wilson plays the type of quarterback that he plays?
Well, couldn't you argue that Russell Wilson, that Matt Hasselbeck would take more hits than Russell because he's not as mobile?
I could argue that Matt Hasselbeck gets the ball out of his hands faster than Russell Wilson ever does.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, Russell tends to extend plays for sure.
Yes, he does.
Because he thinks he can make plays. I don't know. I mean, that's a great question for Hugh. When Hugh comes on with us on Wednesday or maybe even Thursday before the draft, we should ask him, you know, because he's talked about a lot of this being on Russell Wilson. And there's no doubt a lot of it is on Russell Wilson. But you know what? Russell Wilson also, I think, for me, has earned the right to hang onto the ball a little bit longer and try and make chicken salad from chicken crap because the guy can run. Matt Hasselbeck never had a chance to even do that because the athleticism wasn't there way it is with Russell.
Right.
So my point is this. I think Matt Hasselbeck had no choice but to get rid of the ball faster because he can't run the way Russell Wilson can.
But each and every year, Russell's athleticism is going to be
less. That's true. Yes, totally.
So each and every year, it is more paramount for Russell Wilson to get the ball out of his hand.
Well, he's just turning into more of a pocket passer.
Yeah.
Right? He's turning into more of a model for what Peyton Manning was or Drew Brees or what Dan Marino was. And what, he's 33 years old in November, is that right? So obviously at some point that's going to go and he's going to be more of a potted plant. I don't think he's going to be a total potted plant. I don't think Russell Wilson is ever going to be a guy who just sits in the pocket and gets rid of the ball.
Right.
He's always going to be able to rely on some semblance of athleticism. And you've never had a quarterback in this town, not at the pro level, who's ever been able to do that. You know, I saw the list of the most sacked quarterbacks of all time in the history of the NFL, and like four of the five were all running guys because they hang on to the
ball
they don't want to go down because they feel like they can extend the play.
And yet Drew Brees was able to extend plays into his 40s just because his pocket awareness was better than maybe any quarterback ever. And I want to see Russell Wilson over the next 8 years between now and age 40 develop the ability that Drew Brees has of just moving 6 inches here, 9 inches there, back 12 inches, and avoiding sacks that way instead of scrambling around.
Well, Rodgers is the master at that. I mean, he's unbelievable in the pocket because if you saw Aaron Rodgers walking down the street, you would think the guy runs a Blockbuster video store. Honestly, does he look like an athlete to you?
No.
Not at all. With that ridiculous porn stash he's got. Tom Brady, that famous combine picture of him, you remember that?
Yeah.
When he just looks like a guy who has just been sitting around fishing all day long.
Yep.
And couldn't give a crap about what his body looked like. Some of those guys just have that innate ability to move a half an inch to their right or a half an inch to their left and just avoid pressure by a feather. And Russell Wilson has not been able to do that. The rub about Russell that drives me nuts is how often he turns his back to the defense.
Yep.
And that still goes on. This is now 10 years in the NFL, and that stuff still happens. But I'm curious to know on the text line, 49451 for testimonials at 445, what do you want to know out of these guys? Because we haven't heard them talk since the Ram game, and we haven't heard John Schneider talk since the pre-draft press conference from a year ago. You know, I'd love to hear more on Jamal Adams. You know, do you guys regret making the move for Jamal? They would never admit it, ever. Would they ever admit that? But, you know, did you get everything out of Jamal Adams last year that you thought you were going to get? Was there ever a point in time where you thought giving up two first-round draft picks was maybe a mistake for a Jamal? And again, pinning them down and getting them to actually answer the question is next to impossible. You're never going to hear a guy like Pete Carroll come out and say, you know what, Softy? Yes, we regret making the deal for Jamal Adams. They don't talk like that, but I would love to hear their answer and try and translate it.
Well, you wanted, when this whole Russell Wilson thing was going on, didn't you ask for John Schneider to come out and try to pour some water on the fire? So obviously you're looking for him to do that now, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think that's actually a great question for Wednesday. I think for someone to come out and say, look, this was a huge topic. Russell was getting criticized by a lot of people. There were questions from the national media. Why didn't you guys come out and try and put an end to this? Like the Packers came out today. Is it Gutekunst, whatever the hell his name is?
Gutekunst
came out and said, well, Aaron Rodgers is our guy for the foreseeable future. Well, no kidding. For the foreseeable future. The foreseeable future
could be Friday.
Could be 5 days, for God's sake. So, of course, and that's a great way for a GM to put that when he's got Jordan Love right sitting there going into year two or year three, whatever it is. So I would love for someone to just ask John Schneider and Pete Carroll, why did you allow this to continue? Why didn't you come out and try to squash it?
Well, how about Kyle Shanahan today? He was asked if Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be on the roster at the beginning of the season. He's like, you know, we might not live for the end of the week.
Right.
We might, none of us might be on the roster by the end. The total answer, non-answer from Kyle Shanahan is probably exactly what you're going to get from Pete and John.
Isn't that almost an answer, though, what Shanahan said?
Yeah.
Like if he was really committed, excuse me, to Jimmy G being on the roster, it's like, of course he'll be here. Yeah, he'll be here. And I don't understand why more coaches don't do that. You know, who cares if you end up looking like a liar? Who cares if you make a difference? So
you
what?
You just say conditions change.
Gives a damn.
You know,
you say, right now he's on the roster. What do you want from me? I mean, things could change, but I think the fact that, and look, we don't need Kyle Shanahan today saying this to know they're going in a different direction. Right?
Right.
They don't move up to three to draft Kyle Pitts.
But what we don't know is we don't know who's going to start the first game.
Right.
We don't know if Garoppolo's going to be there or not. Because they may draft number three, pick Garoppolo's replacement, and still have Garoppolo start this
year. But what we do know, without a shadow of a doubt, in this division is that the Jimmy Garoppolo era.
Jimmy G, porn star Jimmy, Mr. Garoppolo.
Is closer to the end than the beginning.
Which is sad.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, the guy has been there for 4 years. We're talking 64 possible games. He's got 30 starts under his belt. I mean, I think he's actually played okay, to be honest with you. If he were healthy, I don't think the Niners are doing what they're doing. If Jimmy Garoppolo was healthy and started 65 games or whatever in the last 4 years, that'd be impossible because it'd be, well, the 17th game. But you get my point. If he had started 60 games or 90% of those games. He's got a passer rating of 98, 66% completion percentage. I think if he was healthy, I think there's a really good chance the Niners would be fine with him and build around the guy. Build a phenomenal defense, a phenomenal run game, and win the way the Ravens won. Win the way the Buccaneers with Brad Johnson won.
You think Kyle Shanahan has really ever liked Jimmy Garoppolo?
I don't. Well, he traded for him.
Right, but I mean, really.
He traded for him.
Since he's traded for him, do you think
that's his fault?
I mean, the guy all through the playoffs was like, oh, my God, I'm not going to let this guy throw the ball.
Well, then why the hell did you make the move? I mean, again, it's ridiculous. They should have drafted somebody else and had him compete with the guy like Russell Wilson did for Matt Flynn. I just think, to me, one of the biggest underrated stories of why Jimmy Garoppolo has not worked out in San Francisco, people like to make fun of the way he plays the game. He's never healthy. He's always hurt. Yeah. Always. He's never available. So forget about it. I mean, if the guy's not going to be healthy, what's the point?
That's true.
How in the world can we rely on you if you're hurt half the year? We're going to break. 49451. Coors Seltzer text line brought to you by Hammer and Nail. Dot Build. Anything goes, baby. What do you want to hear John and Pete talk about on Wednesday? What question would you have? What do you want answers to? And should Madison Bumgarner's 7 innings of no-hit ball on Sunday count as an official no-hitter, just like a 9-inning game does? Your thoughts on all that and more coming up. Jimmy Lake, 5 o'clock, right here on Soft.
Do you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR? This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon, parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain.
No.
Yeah. All right, live from Husky Stadium, we are literally right smack above the 50-yard line. Spring game on Saturday. GoHuskies.com is all your information for Tickets for the game, I think they're talking about, what, 9,000 or so here, and should be a pretty good crowd this Saturday. Weather should be okay. So Jimmy Lake joining us at 5 o'clock to talk about that. 49451, the Coors Seltzer text line, brought to you by our friends at hammerandnail.build. John Schneider, Pete Carroll holding a press conference Wednesday. John Schneider talking for the first time in a year. Pete Carroll talking for the first time since the loss to the Rams.
So it's kind of a fun challenge now. We love it.
What do you want to hear from these two on Wednesday? Jackson, what do you got?
Pete, is your real NFL ambition to set a world record for the most hiring and firing of offensive coordinators?
You know, somebody's got to ask him that.
That's a great
Come
point.
On, son. Are you going to dial up on the deal on
I'm
Wednesday?
I'm going to dial up on the deal.
You know what I'll do? I'll do for you what I do for Jackson.
What's
I'll
that?
Pay you off.
You pay me off to
I,
ask that question?
I got to pay Jackson to do his job. I'll give you $10
I'd like to
ask Pete Carroll
bucks.
That question.
Wow.
How's it? Is it worth $10
No, that's like okay. Christmas vacation. Oh, you pick a guy. You give me two quarters to
Yeah. How about $15 How about
Christmas
$20
vacation?
All right.
Rub my bunions. I'll give you 50 cents.
I'll give you a membership in the Jelly of the Month Club if you ask Pete Carroll. Pete, are you trying to set the record for the most offensive coordinators hired and fired over a coach's career in one city? What do you think he'd say? Because he would never expect that, ever.
No, he wouldn't.
He would never expect someone
to
bust his balls like that.
He would just say, no, next question.
Yeah, okay, all right. All right, what's next?
All you guys have to do is get Curtis Crabtree to ask Pete and John the right questions.
Well, I mean, somebody will, but Curtis is too professional to ask questions like that.
Yes.
There's not a chance in hell Curtis will go down that road. Curtis is a true radio media professional. Us, we're clowns. You want someone to ask that, you got a much better chance of us doing it.
We're clowns, but we still want to maintain some sort of relationship with the Seahawks because at some point we'd like to come back into the VMAC when it's available.
You know what's funny about that? I don't know how you think of this. The whole player interview thing that we used to do back in the day with the Dick and Dave in the locker room, all that crap, I haven't missed it. I mean, I've missed being there, just kind of being around and getting a little look at what's happening and all that, but players on radio shows, I don't know, maybe I'll rue the day that I'm saying this, but I haven't missed having them on. They don't really give you much.
I like Trent Duffy today.
Trent McDuffie was great. He was very good. If we can do it live and in person, have guys on the air live and in person, maybe it's one thing. But I don't know, man. Players, 9 times out of 10, they just give you cliches. They don't give you anything really meaty,
nothing
worthwhile. Most of them are kind of duds anyway. I mean, you guys would be shocked at how many conversations we have with players that never make the air because they suck. I'm not talking about the players sucking. I'm talking about everybody together sucking. Not bringing much to the radio show. So I don't know. I haven't missed them much.
Well,
we
do those Dick and Dave. What people don't realize is each one of us do like 5 interviews a piece, and we only play like the best 3 or 4 out of 10.
We don't use them. Well, I don't know. I mean, have you guys missed player interviews on the radio show? I haven't missed them really much at all. All right, what's next?
If they would answer honestly, I'd like to know what they think about the corners.
Yes, that's a great question. How concerned are you about your cornerback position? Well, we're not concerned at all. We love Witherspoon, Reed, Flowers, blah, 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 Pierre Desir. There's a reason why we brought this guy back. I just think it's a huge concern for the Hawks. I don't even need Pete Carroll or John Schneider to tell me. I had a guy text the radio show saying that because we have one good corner, we should be fine. Give me a break. What are we talking about here, Dick? We're talking about winning a freaking Super Bowl. Is this a Super Bowl winning secondary right now?
If you have a Super Bowl pass rush, which we think we might, then you may have a Super Bowl secondary just because you have a Super Bowl pass rush.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have that kind of confidence in them right now. Maybe I will in August. Maybe in October I will. What's next?
Packers GM, let me try this. Brian Gutekunst.
Close. Not bad. It's a pretty good effort by Texty.
Well, see,
pretty good effort.
Texty doesn't know how to translate the umlaut over the U.
Yeah.
So he just said Gutekunst instead of Gutekunst.
I just know this, that if I was walking around with that name, I'd probably change it, to be honest with you, because that's a name that's easily messed up and not in a good way. What's next?
If baseball counts the other things in a game, why not count a 7-inning no-hitter?
They do count. They do count it. It's just, it's a 7-inning no-hitter. I mean, I don't know what to tell you guys. I mean, it's in the rule book, right? The rule book says you have to throw 9 innings to get credit for a no-hitter. Everything else counts because we're not talking about an unbelievable individual accomplishment that is in the record books with other great individual accomplishments. Puckett was texting me today saying, well, you know, should a five-inning win or a seven-inning win count as half a victory? Well, no, because then you would throw the entire order of baseball into chaos. I don't know why it's so hard to just have two different categories of no-hitters. 1-7, 1-9, you move on, you'd be done with
it. Delineate it, yes, like you would a combined no-hitter, like you would a rained, shortened game. You can't tell me there's never been a seven-inning no-hitter before because of a rained, shortened game?
Yeah, because the difference for a guy having a home run in the fourth inning versus a home run in the eighth inning or the sixth inning or the second inning, a home run is a home run no matter where it's hit. A no-hitter, a seven-inning no-hitter is different than a nine-inning no-hitter because it's six extra outs.
Six tough outs.
I don't know how hard this is, why this is so hard for people to figure out. If I hit a home run, now you could argue maybe a home run in the 12th inning or 13th inning is different, whatever. They used to track game-winning RBIs back in the day, and that's no longer a statistic in baseball, but one is not like the other. We're comparing apples to oranges, not apples to apples. We're going to break. Jimmy Lake is going to join the radio show next on Sofie and Dick, live from UW, right here on 950K.